You're listening to Investify, preaching financial independence and assisting investors to achieve a more flexible and free lifestyle through smart financial planning and real estate investing. If leaving the corporate world and jumping into this thriving industry is what you desire, tune in and listen to stories of like-minded individuals who made the leap to financial independence.
What's going on, everybody? You are listening to Investify. My name is Craig Kurlop, aka the Fi Guy, and I'm here with my new co-host, Mr. Chad the Dad Rocky. What's up, Chad?
Hey, Craig. Nothing, man. Super excited to be the new co-host. So I'm looking forward to it. Awesome episode today.
Yeah, man, we're looking forward to having you on. Obviously, if you listened to the last episode of Chad just coming on, you'll know that Chad is one of our best agents here in the Denver market. And so we're super stoked. Obviously, you know a lot about short-term rentals and a wealth of knowledge about a lot of different things. So we're excited to have you on. And yeah, this is going to be a really good episode. Before we get into the episode, of course, you know that we're going to ask you to leave a rating and review. So please, please, please do that. Go to iTunes, go to Spotify, make that happen if you haven't already. Is there anything new in your life that you want to let people know about before we get into today's episode?
I feel like you're prying for something that I'm forgetting that I told you and you're like teeing me up, but
no, I'm literally just asking.
Oh, okay. going to the mountains this weekend. So that's about it.
Nice.
But going along,
out to the mountains, enjoying the snow. We're getting pummeled with snow. We're getting like 12, 18 inches, and we're in the middle of that right now. So it's nice being in a cozy office in my backyard where I don't have to make a commute. So I'm grateful for that.
Got your chicken food in, I saw the other day, so that's good. Chickens would be well. Yeah.
Chickens. If you didn't see my Instagram story, we bought like $200 worth of chicken food to get free eggs. So if anyone tells you they're on a farm because they get free eggs, I can tell you, I don't even want to do the dollar of what I spend on these chickens versus the eggs that we get, but I can promise you that it's cheaper to go to the grocery store. So we're not doing it for the money. We're doing it for the food and because my wife likes it. So anyway, yeah. But speaking of wives, we got Noor and Mike today, a wonderful couple from New York, like the city of New York, and they're investing in New York. Not Manhattan, but pretty dang close. And I think what they've done in their story is super powerful, and how they came together to now create this thing that's bigger is even cooler. So why don't you guys listen all the way through? A little bit of a longer episode today, but it's definitely jam-packed with stuff and very interesting stories. So that being said, let's bring Noor and Mike onto the show. What's up, everyone? I got a super excited announcement to make. The Fi team is throwing their first ever house hacking intensive. This is going to be in Denver, Colorado, April 5th to April 7th, and we are going to dive deep in house hacking. You are going to learn with a bunch of other future house hackers or current house hackers themselves how to analyze markets, how to find a deal in a neighborhood, how to find the correct house, the correct layout, how to run the numbers, how to build your team of agents, of contractors, of property managers, you name it. And we're going to do all of this together in person in Denver. That's going to be just part of it. It's going to be even better when we actually go to houses in Denver, a couple of my personal house hacks that I've already done, some people on our team's house hacks that they've done, as well as some that are on the market right now. So you can see the before and the afters of what a house hack might look like. This is going to be the first time we throw this event. I don't know when we're going to be throwing it again. Make sure you go to thefiteam.com/workshop to buy your tickets. Tickets are just $297, but if you use the code INVEST2FI, you'll be getting 20% off, and the whole ticket is refundable when you do a deal. So that's right. So go to thefiteam.com/workshop, put in the coupon code INVEST2FI to get your 20% off, and then when you do a deal, when you close on your next deal or your first deal, you will be getting that back 100%. Hope to see you guys all in Denver. I can't wait to meet y'all in person, and I'm super excited for this event. We'll see y'all there. Noor Bashara and Michael Foyer, welcome to the show. How are you guys doing today?
Thank you.
Doing great. Thank you.
Pretty good.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're super stoked to have you on. And you guys got such a fun story about, I mean, just starting real estate investing separate, meeting each other, and now you've joined forces. And so I'm really excited to dig in. But Noor, why don't we start off with you? We want to start off with you guys separate. When did you first hear about financial independence and the get away from the whole American dream that everyone kind of touts as kids?
Yeah, so it was 2012 and I was pregnant with my second child and I was 30 years old and we were living in Manhattan, just paycheck to paycheck. Couldn't even imagine the concept of owning a place to live, but didn't want to leave the city. My now ex-husband gave me a book to read over one of the weekends and it was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I read it within 2 days. That's all I did that weekend. And that book was just life-changing. And from that point on, I didn't end up becoming a real estate investor or really doing much with the information because I wasn't really in a position to take action. So it kind of came back about 5 years later, I think. So I had ended up moving to Connecticut when I was married. We moved back to Brooklyn, separated, and then I found myself living in Brooklyn, single mom. I had taken time out of my career in fashion.
You were renting at the time.
Was renting an apartment. And during the time I was home with the kids, I had started a fashion business because I wanted to be a real estate investor, but it took a lot of money and I didn't have the money. So I started a business that was using skills I had. And that sort of propelled me back into that career. But here I was, single mom, not sure what I was capable of earning. So once my divorce settlement went through, I had some money. So I put it in a bank account, didn't touch it. The house in Connecticut had to sell. We're missing a couple of things in the story, but they're not that important. Mm-hmm. Once that house sold, I was able to buy a property in Brooklyn.
Like, why New York? I mean, I know that you like, maybe that's where you know and all that, and that's maybe where your business was, but like, there's like a million better markets than New York to get started in real estate investing.
Hmm. Yes. Well, because I'm a fashion designer. That was my career. And that was my dream from high school, was to move to New York and become a fashion designer, have my own brand. And I just couldn't imagine living somewhere else and moving back to the city. I was able to reconnect with friends from college and I just felt like I just had my life back.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense of fashion and New York go hand in hand.
Yeah. And so the plan was I would go back to working full time. And so that's why it made sense for me to be in Brooklyn. So I realized though that I couldn't earn that much money as a fashion designer, especially after taking time off to really live properly in New York. So basically, Brooklyn has been gentrifying a lot over the last 10 years. So neighborhoods that people would think were dangerous and never go there have become hip and cool. And people have been buying the old brownstones and renovating them. And a neighborhood called Bed-Stuy, Bedford-Stuyvesant, has completely changed. And so that neighborhood would have been amazing. So I basically looked for a two-family house or a three-family house that I could house hack in. So I was priced out of Bed-Stuy. And so I just basically went to the next neighborhood in outside of that with the idea that it was all kind of going away from Manhattan, and neighborhood after neighborhood has been changing.
I think that's an amazing way to, like, when you're thinking about investing in a big city. I did the same exact thing in Denver. I used to call it, like, and I still do, I guess, like the heartbeat, right? Like, where's the heartbeat of New York? It's probably Manhattan, right? And so you can't really get that close to the heartbeat because it's just not going to cash flow. The numbers won't work. But you know, if the city is growing and the population is increasing, that it's only a matter of time before that heartbeat kind of gets further and further out. And you can still kind of get one or two neighborhoods away from the most popping neighborhood. And you just know 3 to 5 years from now, you're going to see the most appreciation in the city. And so that's awesome that you had that foresight. It's also great that you were able to take the lifestyle that you knew and you wanted, a fashion designer in New York, which I don't know why anybody would want that lifestyle. I knew a fashion designer once. It's like a really cutthroat hustle business, isn't it? I remember that woman. She was already stressed a lot. So yeah. Hopefully that's not you. It doesn't seem like you, Nora. But yeah, so I think it's just tremendous that I think it just goes to show you that there's really no excuse. I mean, you're literally in like the most expensive market in the country and you're still able to figure it out. And so, okay, you don't want to be in a brown storm. I can promise you that. But yeah, so tell us a little bit more about kind of where you went next. You found a kind of 2 or 3 flat in Brooklyn?
Yes. So I found 2-family house in this neighborhood that was just over from Bed-Stuy. And it's technically the east side of Crown Heights. Now, Crown Heights is also one of those neighborhoods that's been gentrifying. But if you're on the west side of Crown Heights, you're right by Prospect Park. So it's really cute. There's lots of restaurants and trendy coffee shops and stuff. Well, on my side of the neighborhood, it's technically called Weeksville. It's this little pocket. And there's nothing. It's very residential, but there's just Chinese restaurants and Caribbean spots and pizza. And
well, a lot of storefront churches too.
Yes, yes.
Mm. It's that kind of vibe. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So there's no cool coffee shop on the corner or anything like that. But if you go a mile, you can get to cool restaurants and you're about walking distance to the subway. So it worked for me. And
a mile in Brooklyn is pretty far though. You know, you're walking a mile, it's 20 blocks. A lot goes up in 20 blocks walking through Brooklyn, that's for sure.
Oh, I can only imagine. Yeah.
But I could walk to meet friends for dinner and then take an Uber home. Mm-hmm. And that was like good enough. Mm-hmm. And so the house, I moved in with the kids and I moved into the downstairs apartment, completely unrenovated. And I used all my money to fix the upstairs apartment. The upstairs is a 3-bedroom plus office, 1 bath. I knocked down a couple walls, made the space more usable. And originally I was going to have a long-term rental, but a friend of a friend was managing Airbnbs in Brooklyn at the time. She was like, you know what? You should meet him, see what he thinks. So that apartment ended up turning into an Airbnb.
Which pretty much doubled the revenue.
Yeah.
Effectively. Yeah. Maybe even a little more, actually.
What year was this?
2019.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a good one. Yeah. The laws that have now taken hold in New York came into play.
And before the pandemic.
Right.
Yeah, so
real quick, from 2012 to 2019. This is kind of, just want to kind of clarify what's happening here. This is where you're starting your fashion business. You move from Connecticut back to Brooklyn. That's kind of where all that happened, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
And then real quick too, before we get too deep into that, I just want to kind of set the baseline of this property. Like, how much did you buy it for? How did you find it? How much down did you put?
Hmm. Yes. Those are great questions. So the purchase price was $850,000, okay. Which... it's a lot of money for most places, but for a brownstone in Brooklyn, that's actually a really good deal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I put 20% down, got a traditional mortgage.
Where'd you come up with that? $170,000?
So when I got divorced, I got...
I see. So, some settlement there.
Yes, yes.
Okay. We're not advocating for divorce, by the way. But... maybe there's a minor benefit.
Yeah. So I moved into the downstairs apartment. This house has a huge backyard. And
for Brooklyn.
Yes, for Brooklyn.
It's your relative, a huge backyard.
Maybe not for Idaho.
Into the yard. I guess it's probably 60 feet long.
The whole lot is 127.
Right. And the house is 55. I don't know. The backyard is probably around 65 feet long by 20 feet wide. Which is a huge backyard for Brooklyn.
Okay.
But a very small backyard by just about standards anywhere else, any non-metropolitan.
Enough for a small dog to run outside and do its business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect.
And a trampoline.
And a big giant trampoline in the backyard for the kids to jump. Yeah.
Off the roof, of course, onto the trampoline, right?
No.
Not that you know. So 850, you put 20% down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned that you kind of went through that decision of initially you wanted to long-term rent it, and then you kind of learned about Airbnb. Was it just as simple as like, well, I can get X for long-term, or I can get 2X as Airbnb. Like, I'm just going to Airbnb it. Was that how the decision was made?
Yeah, basically. It was basically like, yeah, you can get like $200 to $300 a night if you put this on Airbnb, and you'll be booked about 20 days a month versus as a long-term rental, I think it was worth maybe $2,500 a month at the time.
Wow. And do you remember what your like PITI, like your principal interest, taxes and insurance, your monthly payment on that was?
Yes. So I just barely qualified for the mortgage. So they gave me a 5.3% interest rate, which was a little bit high at the time. I remember being a little frustrated by that. So I think my initial mortgage and interest was about $3,700.
Okay.
So the other thing about Brownstone Brooklyn is that the property taxes are really, really low. So my property taxes on this house are only $150 a month.
Wow, really? I thought like New York State was just like known for their absurd taxes.
No, in the city, the taxes are fairly, very incredibly reasonable, especially in up-and-coming neighborhoods. The tax basis is lower there, and they want people to move in, so it's... When a house flips, it's the new taxes are based on renovation that's been done, locality, schools, and you know, there's a lot of different factors on it. But the most properties in the city are surprisingly low taxes, especially older properties, distressed properties.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising. Craig, are you gonna move there?
You know, you got me thinking, but New York, I would say, is like in my bottom two states to live. No offense if you guys are still
It is not for everybody, that's for sure.
Yeah, my uncle, I've got an uncle that I'm pretty close with. He lives in Manhattan. He's lived there for like 30 years, and every time I go, I'm just like, it's good for a weekend. It's all I can think. Yeah,
same.
Yeah, the energy is insane. It's berserk, and you get used to it. You're able to sort of turn the personal filters down. You live here, but it is so overwhelming that the constant barrage of what's going on around is
it's the city that fun, sleeps, but right? Yeah,
overwhelming.
Absolutely. And so it sounds like you're on your upstairs unit, then you're making about $5,000 a month from the Airbnb.
I would say that was about the average. And then at the same time that I closed on the house, that full-time job happened. So I literally I moved into the house on Sunday and I started a new job on Monday.
Oh my gosh. Isn't it funny how there's always that perfect storm where it all hits you at once?
Construction going on also upstairs. Full gut.
With two kids.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And no car. So every morning we were taking two trains to get to our old neighborhood, Cobble Hill, where they went to really good public school. Then I would go back on the train, go to Manhattan, go to work. And then I had a babysitter that picked them up from school and brought them home.
Wow.
That sounds impressive.
Yeah. What's funny is that any person that I know with any reasonable amount of success went through some sort of struggle in the beginning, right? Something that just seems absurd, that there's no way. People probably thought you were crazy, right? But you obviously saw the grander picture. And so for those listening, if you are in that beginning phase and you are doing something crazy and people are saying what the heck are you doing? Ignore them. If you haven't yet done something crazy and you don't want to do something crazy, realize that you kind of need to in order to get ahead. So figure out what that crazy thing might be and go tackle it, because that's going to be the start of your story. And that's what's going to be probably the most entertaining part of your story in general. So Noor, how long did the rehab take? How much did you put into it? And then is the bottom unit now nice and renovated?
Yeah.
Also curious too, if you hired it all out, it's always a question of, with a lot of the buyers that I work with, is do the work themselves or hire it out? So curious your thought process there.
Yes. So I found a contractor. Actually, my landlord from the apartment I was moving out of sent this guy over to look at the condition of the apartment and fix a couple things. And so I was like, oh, you're a contractor? I need a contractor. Can I have your information? So I hired him to do the renovation. And my budget was very, very tight. I think I had like $25,000 left after the closing, which the bank, you know, required me to have a certain amount left over. So I just barely squeezed through. So he started with an estimate and he knew that I was on a budget. I think he was just starting out at the time too. So he was super willing to work with me and he separated everything out by materials and labor on every line item. So I was able to comb through his estimate item by item and decide, like, he was going to charge me $300 for a kitchen sink. Well, if I could find a kitchen sink for less than $300, I would buy it and he would take that off. And so item by item, I did that. So also, like, as a side thing, my fashion brand was all about upcycled fashion, which, like, and sustainable fashion. So that's basically the concept of taking some material that's already in the world and repurposing it into a second life. So there's a store in Brooklyn called Big Reuse, where contractors donate construction materials. So I did a lot of secondhand shopping to save money. I bought a used toilet, which actually did not end up fitting for the upstairs apartment, but we used it later for the downstairs apartment. And it's actually a very, really nice toilet. I didn't really know that much about toilets. I spent like $150 on it, or maybe $100, and it's like a $900 toilet.
Wow, there's a
deal. Amazing.
Yeah, and I bought tiles that somebody had donated. I bought this really cool vintage bathroom sink. It's like very old school looking. So I did a lot of my own shopping to save on the budget. But by the time we were done, I think I ended up spending about $70,000.
Wow.
Which also
four bedroom, you know, yes, it's a good size.
Yes.
Yeah, they gutted everything down to the studs and new kitchen, pretty much new bathroom. But we didn't rip out the tub. We just reglazed the tub, tiled the floor, put in a new sink, tiled the walls, and refinished the floors. The floors were actually in good condition. And then that also included taking out a wall inside my apartment. So basically, when you walk in, there's a set of stairs that goes up to the upstairs apartment. So that was a closet in my apartment. So I opened up that wall to make the hallway feel bigger. So that was also okay. Part of that $70,000. So I basically ran out of money. And it was the best thing that I had gotten this job, because although once I launched the Airbnb, I was living for free, getting to the finish line was very much more expensive than I had anticipated. And then I ended up going to my bank and getting a personal loan to finish the rest of the renovations.
Wow. Okay.
It took about 3 months.
To do the whole renovation?
Yes, for the upstairs apartment.
Wow. That actually seems pretty quick for all that you had to do. The personal loan thing, like how much was the interest rate on that and how much were you able to get? And what did you have to back it? Like the real estate?
No, it was just my regular bank. And I sat down with the banker and I explained the situation and I explained what I was using it for. And he told me to ask for the max amount. I think I only asked for $15,000 because I just didn't want to go too much in debt. And the interest rate was about 9%. So it was just an unsecured loan.
Okay. So, and remember, guys, you know, when she was doing this, when, right, interest rates were at like 5-6%, right? And so these personal loans are going to be a higher percentage than the current market. Right now, you know, a loan is 7-8% or whatever. And that personal loan is probably going to be closer to 11-12% today, just so everyone knows. Awesome. And so did you ever get this home like refinanced or anything like that? Like, do you know how much it's worth after all of the renovation?
It wasn't a refinance, but right before the pandemic hit, I wanted to refinance. But at that point, I didn't have the job anymore. And I wasn't eligible to refinance, although the interest rates were in the mid threes. So I ended up being able to do a loan modification during the pandemic. And I basically didn't have to pay the mortgage for about 11 months. Mm. And that gave me the extra capital to renovate the downstairs apartment. And then it ended up being a loan modification. So it's now a 40-year term at 2.8% interest.
Wow, that's awesome. Wow.
Can you explain what a loan modification is compared to a refinance?
Yes. So if there's a situation like a natural disaster, or I think banks do this for personal hardship as well, they basically give you a forbearance period where they basically give you permission to not pay your loan. And there's no consequences on your credit score or anything like that. And then at the end of the forbearance period, they will give you an offer that is designed to help you stay in your home. And you can accept it or not. And you just sign paperwork and they just change the loan terms.
Does that affect your credit at all? Like as not paying your mortgage or anything like that?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. That's good to know. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people kind of went through that during COVID. And so I guess when it was all said and done, how much total rehab did you put into this place? And then rough estimate on what it was worth at the end and what was it cash flowing after you moved out, assuming that you did move out?
Yes. By the time we were working on the downstairs apartment, Mike and I had met. And so we did a lot of that work ourselves, and we did it while the kids and I were living in the apartment, which I don't recommend, but we did it anyway. And so we did it for much cheaper. So probably total, I probably spent about $100,000 all in.
Okay. $100,000 all in. So $850,000 plus $100,000 all in. You're all in at $950,000 basically. And then do you know what it was worth when it was all done?
I'm not sure, but I tried to get a HELOC about 2 years ago, and the appraisal came in at like 980. So it wasn't enough equity, but there is a house on the same street that recently sold for 1.4.
Like, okay. This house
bigger. Yeah. So I guess the valuation that they had given it was just not really that accurate. But really, in the last couple of years since then, I guess.
Yeah.
The value we figure is at least 1.3, 1.4 now, most assuredly.
Wow.
At this point. Yeah. The appreciation of the valuation of properties in New York City is pretty nuts.
You bought it at the perfect time of 2019.
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of. But it's always the perfect time to buy real estate unless you know it's super inflated. Because if you can hold for more than, 4 or 5 years, you're going to see some appreciation. And if you can hold for 7, or more, you're going to see appreciation in decent areas.
And so did you move out of this property? And is it cash flowing you today?
Yes.
So where's the cash flow at today?
The kids and I moved out about 2 years ago. And right now, profit, we're making about $5,000 a month.
Wow. Jeez.
That's amazing.
Both Airbnb on both units?
No.
Oh, no. There's another story here for you.
So when the pandemic hit, I ended up switching to long-term tenants. Then when I moved out of the downstairs apartment, we turned that one into an Airbnb, and it was doing so well that I was just about to set up the upstairs apartment to also be an Airbnb, and the city shut us down.
So yeah, you probably heard about all the crackdown that's going on in New York City with Airbnb and the hotel lobby, and yada, yada. So the mayor's office set up a task force. They showed up at the door while we had guests. We weren't there at that time. Yeah. So long story short, shut it down immediately.
Yes.
And basically turned off the Airbnb listing immediately in order to satisfy what we were told by our lawyer, what we should do, and got a tenant in there within how fast? Within a month.
Within a month.
Within a month, we had a tenant in there paying pretty much top of the market rent because it was during COVID and rents were through the roof for COVID. So we put it up for fair market value at the time, and we're getting, very fair market value, even today, we're now actually a little under market now, probably.
Yes.
But where we ended up getting a very good long-term tenant in there, and that's paying a you know, a great rate that's half of what we were earning with Airbnb, but
yeah,
still great.
In the end, it was not that bad because the rents had shot up so quickly. We were so shocked by how much we were able to get in rent. And it's definitely less work to have long-term tenants. So
100%.
It was all good.
So what's the total rent today on the long-term, like, yeah, that you collect gross?
Gross rent is about $8,600 a month. We also charge them for utilities that we then, we just basically prorate the utilities based on the size of the apartment.
Wow. So that, I just want to say, like, that's amazing that you're able to do that in New York City or, like, you know, Brooklyn. I always thought, if you came to me an hour ago and said, can I house hack in New York? I'd probably be like, yeah, you probably should move. And so the fact that you're able to make it work, and while the $5,000 a month is awesome, right? It definitely didn't come without sacrifice, which you just described. But what's even cooler is that you have probably close to $500,000 in equity at this point, right? And so, you know, if your goal is financial independence, right? I think what a strategy is that a lot of people can do, and I don't think it's talked about enough, is invest actually for a little bit more towards appreciation. And in 5 years, when your property is now worth $500,000 more, you can then sell it or whatever, put that into a cash flowing market, and you've got $500,000 to put into a cash flowing market. You might be able to buy five houses that each cash flow you $1,000, which is the same as what you're doing in New York City. But I think what you guys did is crazy. So if you aren't able to replicate that, you know, a whole bunch, like you're able to still generate some really good cash flow based off your appreciation as part of the strategy. So I think that's amazing. Some congrats on that. Seems like a home run for your first one.
That's one thing people also don't think about is the rental appreciation as well. And the rental market changed very significantly from 2019 up to now. So it really came up to the rents coming up very quickly.
Yeah. Yep. And that's why I always say it's like the worst year to own real estate is the first year you buy it. And then everything gets better after that. You've got the opportunities to refinance. You've got increased rents. You've got increased appreciation. Like, it just gets sweeter over time.
Yeah. And like you alluded to earlier, Craig, the value of the property, it goes up. The rents go up. Everything goes up. It all goes up. Even if it's slowly, you're constantly going up. And because we're in a borderline neighborhood, they go up a lot as the change happens. And we happen to hit Goldilocks zone where that was happening perfectly for us. And now it's just going up, 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 and the values everywhere are going up.
The one thing that goes down is your principal balance. It works in opposite of each other. Rents go up, income goes up, but your principal remaining balance goes down. That's the beauty of it.
Absolutely.
And the crazy thing is that, so right before the pandemic, I ended up getting laid off from that job. And I was actually at work that day wishing it away. And I was like thinking, well, if I do some consulting with my business and I sell this many pieces of clothing, maybe I don't need the job anymore because of the house. Now I'm making more money in cash flow than my take-home pay was from that job.
That's wild. That's financial independence right there. That's how you, that's like how you know you made it. So, Nort, that's an amazing first story, and I think it's it definitely took a lot of courage, I would say, for you to kind of go forward with that. Mike, I want to hear about kind of how you got started and hear about your first investment and all that, because this is still before you and Nort met.
My then fiance and I were looking for an apartment. My twin brother was also looking for an apartment. In the looking we saw, we didn't really see what we were liking. So we decided just almost on a lark, we're going to join forces and look for a two family. So we started.
And where was this at?
This was in Brooklyn, New York also.
In Brooklyn, okay.
We're looking specifically in the area of Windsor Terrace, Park Slope, which is right around Prospect Park, which is like Central Park of Brooklyn. Huge park. It has a zoo and a lake, and it's very desirable area. So in our looking, my ex-fiance decided she's going to go old school and look in the newspaper. And this is 1999. So yeah, everything was, you know, pretty much online, but she gets the New York Times. We were big New York Times readers. So she opens the Times and finds a house in the neighborhood. Didn't see it anywhere else. We go look at the house and we're like, holy cow, this house is great. How much are they asking? And we met the owners. The owner had lived here for 65 years. It was a family house. The house was in disrepair. It had drop ceilings everywhere. It had not been updated since the early 70s, but the bones of it were in great shape. It was a fully detached house, which is an unusual item. And they knew the history of the house. So this house apparently was literally across the street. Over 6 months, they moved the house across the street to where it currently resides. And they knew the history of the house because they've owned it for so many years. And they were super nice. We said, we'll meet your asking price, which at the time was $405,000, which is very little. Now this house is, now worth significantly more. This is a two family. We got four bedrooms upstairs. There's two bedrooms downstairs and then a full basement, full legal two family, nice sized backyard, has swimming pool in the backyard. So it's an above ground swimming pool with deckage around it. And we made our offer and very quickly we got the house and it was like it happened like super fast. And I went from looking for a two bedroom apartment to buying a house with my brother and his wife, who was pregnant, very pregnant, in fact, at the time, and my then fiance. And we knew we had to do a gut renovation on the house when we bought it.
And out of the newspaper. That's the best part.
Out of the newspaper, yeah. So do not hesitate to look in places you don't know, because we actually, the other house that we're doing right now is another story like that, where it was found by looking in a place you wouldn't expect to find it. And nobody else is looking there. So we didn't have any competition on the buy and it just happened extremely fast.
We hope this episode is inspiring you to take action. If you're thinking about becoming a real estate agent or an agent who wants to join an investor-friendly team, just hit me up on Instagram at the Fi Guy, because we are growing our team in Denver, Seattle, San Diego, and Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, but also adding to our network in all 50 states. And if you didn't already know this, the Fi team provides a super supportive environment with one-on-one coaching, accountability, and ongoing training to help develop kick-ass, rock-star, investor-friendly real estate agents. So hit me up on Instagram, at the Fi Guy, and we'll set up a time to chat. Can't wait to chat with you.
So did you and your brother just like split the mortgage payment on that one?
Yeah, when we were getting the place, we basically split the house. It's basically four floors of the house. Mm-hmm. So we split the space. It was fairly even amount of space. And we just split the space. And for functionality that was needed, the split was pretty much perfect for us. And then the gut renovation we did, I'm actually a GC, a general contractor. And back then I actually wasn't, but this is sort of what led me to become a general contractor by doing a full gut renovation of the house, bring crew in that I literally, and should I tell them the South story?
Sure.
I'll make a long story short. In Brooklyn, it's very common, as it is in most cities, if you need day labor help, you can find them on certain corners of literally on the corner. Mm-hmm. If you're by where there's some often by Home Depot or things like that, people just looking for work. So I ended up saying, you know what? I'm going to be doing a lot of work myself. Let me see if I can find somebody. I went to a location on Fort Hamilton Parkway and 39th Street, I think it is, where there's still people to this day are still, you'll go there and see 25, 30 people every morning looking for day labor work. So I look through the crowd of people, like there'll be, a ton of people and they all, of course, rush the car. They want to, I can do anything. Do you paint? Oh, yeah, I paint. Oh, you do electric? Oh, yeah, everybody can do everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So one guy was standing in the back and he just kind of looked sort of austere. He had a seriousness about him and he looked like he wanted to work and he looked like he could work. So I kind of point over. I said, okay, you work. Can you paint? Can you this? He said, he's nodded his head. Yes. He gets in the car. I'm like, okay, let's go. Come. He gets in the car, barely speaks a word of English. He's from the Republic of Georgia.
Okay.
And he wanted to work and he said, I work. I said, okay. He ended up becoming a close friend of mine. I'm still good friends with him to this day.
Wow.
And I ended up sponsoring him and one of his cousins and things to work in the United States. And it turned into a whole thing for a year from that day. For a full year, he was working in my house, learning English and learning how to be a contractor, basically. Mm-hmm. So he helped me to build this whole house. And I had a small crew that I had also hired at the time to do the construction that was needed in the house. Every wall, floor, ceiling, plumbing, electrical, everything redone.
Wow. So how much did you put into it when it was all said and done?
About $250,000, which doesn't sound like much, but that's because we did it literally, I did it myself with crew that I had found that was very reasonable.
That sounds like a lot. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I mean, it does, but you know, the house is about 3,300 square feet, every floor, wall, ceiling, plumbing, electrical, everything.
Everything, totally.
You know, 250 all right. Yeah.
So if you bought it for 405, you put 250 into it, right? I'm doing the same math here, right? You're looking at about 655 all in. How much do you think it was worth, you know, when it was all said and done?
At that time, I would say probably right around between 650 and 700 would be my guess.
Okay.
We were getting the house, buying the house, making the house to live in. It wasn't meant to be an investment other than I want to stop paying rent. I want to own and live where I want to live in what I want. So at the time I was working. I had another company that I had in the city. We were working, and this did push the limits of the budget for all of us at the time collectively. And our interest rate at that time, I want to say, was in the fives. Mm-hmm. On a 405, we put down 5%. Because at the time, you could put down 5%. So we put down very little money on this buy at the time.
That's amazing. And so then over the course, because this is kind of like late 90s, early 2000s, right? And so like what happens for the next, you know, 15, 20 years?
So in Brooklyn and New York in general, it's commonly understood that pretty much every 7 years, your property values double. And that has been perfectly true. Wow. So our valuation of the property now is around $2.4 million, give or take.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So you got just one property, right? Gives you over the course of 20 or so years.
Not even 20.
Yeah, about 20 years. Gives you over $1 million in equity. That's amazing.
Yeah. And
so have you done anything with that? Have you like taken that equity out to buy other properties? Or?
Yeah. So we did a small refi. So my fiance at the time and I parted ways amicably. But she did put investment in the house, so bought her out of the property and did that by taking a very small note on the property and bought her out of the property a couple of years after that time. And other than that, there wasn't anything other than just refining to bring the interest rate down, which actually just recently happened again, because there is still a little note carried on the property. Because of the pandemic, we were able to bring the interest rate down to 2.75%. Just why not?
Well, yeah. Yeah. And so then what's the monthly payment on that thing now?
Oh, like $2,000 a month, a little less.
Wow. And does your brother still live on the other side?
No. So I've since taken on a new partner. My brother wanted to cash out of the house because he wanted to buy something else. So he needed some, without getting into all the details of it, he ended up cashing out. A good friend of mine bought in, and now we have rentals in the other units that cash flow, you know, pretty nicely for that half of the house, let's say.
So we now
live here. This is the house we're in right now. We now live in this house in one of the units in the house, which is effectively a 5-bedroom, 2-bath.
And we essentially split this very small mortgage.
Yeah.
So we pay half of that, and then our portion of the utilities. So we get to live in this amazing neighborhood in Brooklyn for very, very little money.
Yeah. Pennies on the dollar. Yeah. And I think people always say when you house hack, like the intent is hopefully to live for free or pretty, but like pretty dang cheap is also really good too, especially given the situation. And so at what point did you guys kind of cross paths and meet, and how did that change your real estate career and journey?
She'll remember the day better than I will, for sure.
So I closed on my house at the end of January 2019. It was actually the day before my birthday. Mm-hmm. So I had closed on my house at the end of January 2019. And then Mike and I met in August 2019. So at that point, I was about 6 months in. I had gone through the renovation, stabilized the property, was making good money on Airbnb, still living in the completely unrenovated downstairs apartment. And at that point, by that time, my oven stopped working. And I decided not to buy a new one because I had this big vision for renovating MySpace for how I really wanted it to be. And so it felt silly to buy a mediocre stove when mm-hmm. I was going to replace it with something fancy soon. Mm-hmm. So I was refusing to buy an oven. I was toasting bread for the kids on cast iron pan on the stovetop. The stovetop still worked. I think my mom sent me a toaster oven. Mm-hmm. And on our first date, we basically, he mentioned having tenants. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, oh, well, actually I have an Airbnb. And so we connected over that.
Yeah, we connected over the conversation about real estate. And yeah, I want to say, you know, fell in love very quickly as a result in a way, because we both mm-hmm. sort of are in a similar place. We have a property, we live in our properties, we're both house hacking, and we both have love of real estate. So it sort of was, it kept the conversation going very easily, for sure.
For sure. I think values aligned is a very important aspect of a relationship. So that was August 2019. You know, we're sitting here in 2024. What's happened in those 5 years since you guys? Since that first date?
A lot has happened in that time. As you know, she has a couple of kids. So just going back to, I guess, that time, we dated a little bit and then she's like, oh, maybe, you know, you want to come by the house. And I looked on the map and I'm like, I know the neighborhoods in Brooklyn. And I'm like, huh, that's interesting for you to be living there with kids over in this area. It's pretty far from the city. And I know that the neighborhood over there is a borderline neighborhood. A little high crime rate area, it's known as in Brooklyn area. I was like, wow, okay. So I get over to the area and there's no parking. And I walk into the space and the oven doesn't work. I didn't know this before that. We started dating, we're together, and this oven not working is kind of like making me crazy. I'm a big egg guy. I love eggs in the morning. And to not be able to fry up a couple of eggs, it's just like, what? How? How are you?
The stovetop worked, just not the oven.
Oh, right. The oven. Well, other stuff, baking, doing
it. And then it was getting worse, though. Right. It kept getting worse as time went on.
It was a mess. The whole thing was, it was not great. So we ended up replacing.
Your neighbor was giving away a stove.
So yeah, he was getting a new thing. So I'm like, oh, you're getting rid of a stove? I'm like, I'm going to take your stove. He's like, okay, take it. So now the stove is parked outside of my house. How did I get it out? Did we borrow a truck or something?
No, it fit in your car.
Did we put that thing in the car?
Yes.
Oh my God.
So one day he's like bringing over this stove from his neighbor and installing it in my kitchen.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm just replacing the stove here. And it was a kind of a mess. We had to like clean it and scrub it. It was like so dirty. Well, not dirty, just caked on, whatever. But it was kind of newish also. So we did that and, you know.
And then just once the pandemic hit, we took off all the doors to the kitchen cabinets, painted all the doors, replaced the countertop with an IKEA countertop.
Yeah.
My contractor had given me some other used appliances from the next job he went on. Yeah. So we replaced the refrigerator and added a dishwasher, which Mike was able to add the dishwasher connection.
Yeah.
So we basically made it look like a decently renovated kitchen for very little money.
Very little.
Then we redid the floors in all the main areas.
And I was trying to impress her at the time because I knew she was an upcycled fashion person. So I'm like, okay, how can we upcycle? What can we do here? So I'm like, okay, I got this. We're getting this from over here. And I kind of like keeping things out of landfill too. Like, I think it's great. And so, yeah, it was part of the courtship.
Yeah.
Kitchen happen.
Nice. And then, isn't that funny? Yeah.
We kind of had to have a conversation of like which house should we live in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because then things progressed and we got engaged and then we have to decide where we're living.
Mm-hmm. And so how'd you make that decision? Seems pretty easy. Yeah. Seems like an easy decision, but
it was. Well, it wasn't though.
It wasn't that.
It wasn't a coin toss.
No, it was not a coin toss.
It wasn't that easy for me.
No,
because I felt like I had like built this, like I had like done this thing, and I was like very attached to my house. Although the location is less than ideal, I just felt like so empowered to be there. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I feel like that's a very common thing, like especially your first one. You know, you put blood, sweat, and tears and the story behind it. It's not easy, even though it should be easy, but for most it's not, which makes sense.
Yeah.
You fall in love with them is what happens. Every house you work on, you fall in love with it. It's yours. You're intimate with every detail of it. And you were living there and it was independence. It was like everything, you know, you had achieved through this.
Yeah. We're not like logical, right? Like humans are not logical. By any logical sense, it should have been a no-brainer. And like the way I'm looking at it, right? Like as a very unbiased, I've never seen your house kind of thing. But I've been there too. We're like, when I build something with my own hands and I saw it go from this piece of junk to like this beautiful thing. Yeah. I mean, like you're not going to see it anymore. People are going to live in it for years without you even probably driving by it. You know? Oh, yeah. I totally get it.
And I think at that point I was looking at just the numbers. And I think if we stayed in my house, we would have been truly living for free. Mm-hmm. And so I was focused on that. But there's so many more upsides to living in this neighborhood, especially for the kids. And I did not see the vision at that time of how much cash flow my house would make to not live in it.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Amazing. And so that's kind of, it sounds like that's kind of where you're at today. Or have you purchased any other properties between then and now?
No. So then we decided, since the city shut down the short-term rental, it was really fun to have that. And it was really fun to watch the money come in. So we decided to look for a market where short-term rentals were allowed. We found a town in upstate New York in the Catskill region called Saugerties. Saugerties. People always think I'm saying it wrong. Mm-hmm. Or people think I'm saying something else.
Mm-hmm. It's near the town of Woodstock, if you know, that area up there.
Yeah.
So it's a nice area, a real nice area.
So we found that house in the fall of 2022, closed on it in March of 23, and then finished the renovations and launched it as an Airbnb in August of 23.
Okay. Awesome. So I know real quick, we're late. And we talked about both of your first deals, but this is your first deal together.
Yeah.
So this is the long awaited
for real deal.
Yeah.
This is the one that made you guys kind of join together as a unit, as real estate investors together. So my first question is, you went under contract in October and you closed in, you said March or something. Like that's a long under contract period. So like something happened.
Well, we were using a second home loan and the lender did not like the condition of the property. It had been sitting empty for a very long time and there was mold in the basement and they deemed that it had foundation issues. So we ended up having to renegotiate with the seller, bring in a bunch of contractors to give us estimates and basically turned it into a renovation loan to satisfy the lender. So it took a lot of extra time.
Okay, that makes sense. I figured there was something there. And so how much did you end up buying it for? How much did you end up renovating it for? All the details.
What was the original ask we had seen?
The ask was $299.
Yeah.
It was in the other section of Zillow. Mm-hmm. So
This is
basically, it was listed by a real estate agent in Canarsie, Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So it did not show up on the local MLS in that town. And I was getting desperate because we were running out of houses to look at. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, there must be something else. What else can I find? So that's where I found it. And then...
So she looked in a completely different market. This is 2.5 hours upstate New York. The only place this house was listed was in the New York City area, actually in the locality of Queens, which really doesn't make any sense. So it didn't exist to anybody. Nobody's looking at this house. It's just been sitting on the market. The brokers just failed.
That's a great story. As an agent, I've seen this before of agents kind of screwing up. I've seen an agent list a house as zero bed, zero bath. So nobody, you know, when they're searching for a 2+ bed or a 3+ bed, it wasn't hitting anything. But it's amazing when agents don't do their job. I like that.
And that worked out so well for us because we came in with the way the property was and the issues we were having, and we kind of lowballed it. And we went back and forth on this. If you want to put your marriage on trial, buy property together. I can tell you, it's crazy. But it's also really fun and rewarding. Yes. But we went back and forth on what we want to pay. And I'm like, look at the numbers. Look at what we have to do. This house hasn't, nobody's made any offers on this house. Nobody's seen this house. It's listed in the wrong market. So we lowballed this house pretty dramatically for what we knew the ARV would be on the house.
So I don't remember. I think our first offer was 229. We met in the middle. They countered to something. We met in the middle at 252.
Right.
And then when we found out about all that extra work that had to get done, mm-hmm. we renegotiated down to 235.
Yeah.
And then when we did the walkthrough the day of closing, the hot water heater wasn't working.
Yeah.
So we ended up with an extra 3,000 back
at the table, literally right at the table. We got another 3,000.
Wow. So it was listed at 299, but you got it for 235.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is in 2022.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And the market's kind of softening at this point. Okay.
And we also had a renovation loan built into that also for, what was it?
About 30,000.
Okay.
And then we ended up total spending about 170 to do the work, plus another 30,000 ish for furnishings to set it up as a short-term rental.
Our goal with setting up the short-term rental, because there's a lot of short-term rentals in the Catskill region, was to be top 5%. We want to make this place the place that everybody wants to go to be the only logical choice if you want a nice spot there, was our goal.
That's awesome. I'm in the short-term rental market as well, and I work with a lot of buyers, but my mindset's the same of doing something, but you just got to do it the best that there is. And so you got to set yourself apart. You got to have that extra amenity. There's too many people doing short-term rentals now, and there's too many options. And so if you can be the best at it, you'll succeed. If you're going to just put up, not professional photos or have no amenities, then those people are going to go away. So I love the mindset of, let's do this. And we know there's competition, but we'll just do it better than everybody else. And that's how you win.
Yeah, that was exactly our thinking. And exactly where we took it.
And it's the Catskills is a different market than Brooklyn. For Brooklyn, I was able to shop Craigslist and throw things together and it was good enough as a short-term rental. Mm-hmm. But in the Catskills, I looked at the top performing properties and I basically saved a folder of images of the nicest looking ones with the 5-star reviews that were asking for the most money per night and just basically used that as a guiding point for style, for how it should look, what people want.
I think that's a great piece of advice is like, look at your competition and beat them, right? I mean, it's right there. Yeah. So I feel like it's like cheating off of a test. Like the answers are right there in front of you,
You couldn't be more right. Like all of it is available. People are just not putting the time in and nor put a ton of time researching and looking at all of the competition, really understanding the numbers. I mean, understanding the town, the locality, everything. And what we wanted also was a house that felt bucolic, that you drive up to it and you feel like you're away from it all. Mm-hmm. We're only 9 minutes from the heart of downtown Saugerties, but this block just is a canopy road. Like it just checked all the boxes when we first got there. And we were in love with the location as well as the town is all about Airbnbs and bringing more people to town. There's an event that goes on there that it's called HITS, which is a horse show that goes on all summer. So there's so many things that draw people to the town. We knew it was the right location to buy. And then you found this house in this town.
Yes.
And on this off market, in the wrong market. It was an unbelievable
and ironically, set of events. The setting that this house is on, the street, the piece of land is actually way nicer than any of the other houses we had looked at that were contenders.
Wow.
It just worked out really well.
How much did you say that you put in total again? You said 30 on the furnishing and then how much on the renovation? 100 and
170.
Mm-hmm. 170. So if you bought it for like, would you say like 250 or 235?
235.
Plus you're about another 200. So you're at 435. Do you know what it's worth today?
Yes. We ended up doing a cash out refinance to consolidate the line of credit and credit cards we used to finish the renovations. Mm-hmm. So the appraisal came in at 445.
Okay. So not a whole lot of like forced, like the renovation you did not really equate to like forced equity. That was probably worth it. But the cash flow you're getting by being in the Catskills, let's talk about that. So like how much are you getting on a monthly basis average? What's your monthly payment? Mm-hmm.
So right now the mortgage is $2,150, taxes are $527, insurance is about $150, and then there's a lot of extra expenses for a short-term rental. it's quite costly to run the hot tub. So the hot tub is like about $325 a month plus propane for heating, electricity, internet, and trash pickup. So we're probably all in at about $4,000 a month would be the average expense. And then revenue projection, we projected about $70,000 for the year, but we're currently on track to get to $90,000.
Wow.
So October, November, December, we were making over $8,000 gross revenue, including the cost of cleaning. January so far, I think January is going to be about $4,500 just because the holidays are over and people are booking weekends only. But average for the year, I think we'll be at about $90,000.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. So you're looking at like $7,500 a month on average in cash flow on a $4,000 of expenses.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good cash cow. And I think it's important to find markets that actually like Airbnbs because a lot of markets are steering away. And so it's not really a good long-term approach in many locations. So your place is beautiful now, right? You just got done furnishing it. Like, do you have anything in your budget to keep it updated? Because now you're the comp for someone else to do better. And so it's kind of like this, I see it as almost like a hamster wheel of keeping up with the Joneses with Airbnbs, where like you got to have the most beautiful property. And if you wait 2 years, then your decorations become dusty and they're not in style anymore. So like, do you have any of that kind of funneled in, or do you got a plan for that?
I think the way we've outfitted it in part is we got a little mid-century modern vibe going on, which is semi-timeless. We did the black cabinets in the kitchen, which has a nice modern Manhattan penthouse look, but we have some wood in the space too that warms it all up. So what we've done is we didn't try to create a theme or something that is likely to go out of style anytime soon.
No green walls with like a live, laugh, love, like light up thing in there or anything?
No. Nothing too crazy. I mean, we got a nice leather couch, things like that. Things that should last, right? We do have in the living room a white carpet, which she and I butted heads over, but I think in the end she was right. It works great. People love it. You know, we have a little sign at the door, please take off your shoes when you come in, and people really seem to respect that. And as part of our budget, every year or two, $300, we replace the carpet if we need to.
We
built that into the budget, and the revenues we're seeing allow for these kinds of things. So we can give that thing that you don't normally get. A white carpet in the living room is crazy. And everyone will tell you it's crazy, but it also is great because nobody's doing it and it feels elevated. So that's what we're doing. We built that into our budget. It'll be another $300 when it is. That's okay because we are separating ourselves from the herd a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. Like couch pillows are easy to replace.
Yeah.
So when they need to be replaced, it's not going to be a big deal. The white rug, happy to get a new one every year. And then in April, we're going to go back and we're going to add some more landscaping, do a couple of things that didn't get finished on the first round. And then another thing is that it snowed last weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was able to get the photographer to go back.
She's been waiting.
The very next day.
We got to get the snow so we can get the snow photos.
took a round of seasonal photos. And so now our first photo on the listing is a picture of the hot tub open with this beautiful snow backyard background.
Skiing is 20 minutes away. So skiing is what we're targeting now where we're constantly renovating the photos to fit the season,
And so that's one of the things as far as like keeping up with the competition is to constantly rotate the photos and make sure that people see the seasonal photo first so that they can picture themselves coming in the snow.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense. I feel like, Mike, you just have to let Nora do her thing. She's a New York designer, I feel like that's a trump card. You're just like, your opinion doesn't matter because you're not a New York designer, but I am.
Yeah, well, but the thing is, I am though. In my previous life, I'm a video producer and I had a post-production facility. And design, creative direction was my thing. So
we bought heads. Okay, you put heads on that.
I became a contractor through a series of just crazy life quirks. but I came from a whole different world where design is my thing. So yeah, we butt heads a little bit about it. I do defer to her because so far, and in no small part because it's working, right?
Yeah.
It's absolutely working. You know, pretty much everything we've come up with together, everything she's done on her own, it's all working very well. So, and I'm happy to
sit. And then one thing we ended up just, he came to terms with it, is that I'm doing the management. And so I handle the messages, the guest communications. And we found it didn't work for us to both see the messages come in. Mm-hmm. It caused a lot of conflict because we just do things differently. So I handle probably 95 to 99% of it. Mm-hmm. And then if there's something that like, oh my goodness, the guests lost their dog, then we both get involved.
So whenever there's any kind of incident or something, it's like, hey, what do you, you know, we'll talk it through and then decide together, oh, how should we respond to this? But for the most part, and this is just great advice for anyone, you got to separate your roles when you're doing things together as business partners. And certainly as a couple, you got to define your roles, separate your roles, do separate things, and stay, even if you know how to do that thing, stay in your own lane anyway. Let the other person handle it. You trust them to do it and just let them do their part. You do your part. And it just, it minimizes or even eliminates conflict. And that's so important in buying real estate together and any kind of business, certainly in life, I guess, you know.
Totally.
We just jumped into this project without doing that.
Yes. Yeah. And we had a lot of crazy.
You guys are spouses, which adds another element, but ultimately when you're talking Airbnb, you're business partners, and having two partners do the same role never works. And so even if you're buying this with a spouse and this is a teammate thing, like you almost have to take off your spouse hat for a hot second, put on your business partner hat and work in that way. But don't talk to your spouse like a business partner. I've done that before. My wife does not like it.
Yeah. So. Well, we do a weekly meeting where we do talk to each other like business partners, and then that hat comes off. You're right. And then it's hard to separate it, but you're right.
You couldn't be more. And so real quick, we are definitely running out of time here. So give us like a 2-3 minute, what's next? Where do you guys want to take your portfolio next? Are you guys going to sit in your Catskills house forever? Like, where are you going?
Yeah.
4 more houses this year that are short-term rentals is...
She's very ambitious.
And then we've just started a postcard marketing campaign to go directly to sellers. And we're talking about taking private money, which a year ago, even 6 months ago, I would have been like, no way, I wouldn't even consider that. But now we're realizing that we can really scale by getting a little more creative.
And do you want to stay in the New York Catskills area, or are you going to venture out?
We're looking there now because we know the market well. We have infrastructure, and that's hugely important for, I guess, anyone listening. Once you have infrastructure, meaning good cleaner, somebody to take care of the lawn and the surrounding property, and somebody to do repairs locally, we have that set up beautifully there, and we want to leverage that. So the next property we want to do kind of in the area. So we're looking, we have an offer in right now on a property about 15 minutes away from this house. And we know we've got all of those components already set up. We know the numbers, we know the competition. So we're still targeting this area, you know, it just...
And on this next house, you're going to do the 20% down as well? Or are you raising private money for it?
We're actually trying to do a BRRRR for the next one, where we would either use a line of credit or private money as the down payment, borrow 100% of the renovation cost from the lender, and then do the cash out refinance at the end.
Very cool. It's amazing. Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing where you guys are at 12 months from now, and hopefully you've got 6 plus properties.
If we get one more, I'll be happy.
You say 6 or whatever, and if you end up with 5 or 4, I think you'll still be probably pretty happy with that. Awesome. Well, Norm, Mike, we got to get into the final part of our show.
It's time for the final report.
There you go. Awesome. All right, Chad, kick us off with the first question.
All right, guys. What book are you reading right now for the both of you?
I'm reading 10x is easier than 2x.
Oh, nice. Man.
I just read that one.
Beautiful. I literally have a friend that's reading it, and he just told me about it yesterday. And Craig just read it too. So that's awesome. That's next on my list.
Yeah, it's like just a whole mindset shift, which is hence why I'm making the goals bigger this year.
I love it. That's amazing. That makes sense. Mike, what about you?
I'm actually rereading a book that I read quite a few years ago, Fierce Conversations by Karen Scott, which is a great, it's a management book, but it's really good for just interpersonal relationships. And, you know, one of the main tenets is if you think there's a conversation that needs to be had, there is. Mm-hmm. Have the conversation.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Communication is everything. So it's a really great book, and it's not just for people who are managing anything. It's just good for anyone, honestly. The tenets in the book are fun and they help you communicate better with everybody.
Cool. Yeah, both really good books. I've read both of them. Second question, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I'm going to go by the advice from Rich Dad Poor Dad, which, because that was the beginning of my real estate journey, was to get in the position to have your money work for you instead of working for your money.
Yeah, it's so good.
Right.
And I'd say, I mean, there's so many little things you hear over the years, but one of them that always rings in my ears is surround yourself with the people who you would like to be. The people who you, I can't remember what book it was, but the five people you spend the most time with are the people who you're going to be like. So if you can find someone who's doing what you want to be doing, or starting, or whatever it is in your orbit, and spend more time with them, learn from them, and just be around them. It just happens. Just because you're around that person, you grow. So if you're lucky enough to be able to be around people who, and we've joined several of the groups, Bigger Pockets, and several of the groups we're part of, just being in this community around these people helps you to just become what you want to be.
Yeah, it's so true. I say that same thing all the time. I have meetups and I host them, and that's one of my taglines of like, just go to these and surround yourself with people that are doing what you want to do, and it'll just kind of manifest itself. So yeah, 100%. That's awesome.
It really does.
Question number three, what is your why for doing all this, for living the single mom?
It makes her happy, that's why.
Yeah. happy wife, happy life, right?
There you go.
I mean, the why is freedom. I think freedom to be able to have experiences and travel and just not have any financial stress, and to have something to leave behind for the kids.
Yeah.
But then also, even on top of that, I just love the process of turning something old and ugly and sad into something beautiful. Just goes back to my sort of creative fashion background.
Yeah.
And for me, it's, I mean, much of the same. I feel like I've been in a number of different businesses, and I've worked. I worked for NBC for a while. I've worked for a lot of other people, and I've never been a great employee because I don't like working for other people. I don't listen very well. I want to do what I want to do. And it's more fun than anything else that I have done in so many ways. And you have your time back. It's your time. You have to be committed. You got to put the time in, but you're able to make your own schedule. And if you're able to craft your schedule, you can get on your bike in the middle of the day and go for a ride around the park and then come back and have lunch and then go back to work and maybe work till 7 or 8 or 9, answer some emails late at night, but you're able to live life the way you want to. You're not in control or not controlled by anyone else's schedule, but what you want.
Yeah, totally. 100%. Yeah. I think Craig and I both align with you on the agent life. Like, I work 10 times harder now than I did before, but I actually enjoy it. Like, kind of what you're both saying, like, you like it and you can take that bike ride, but maybe you're working till 9. Like, I would rather be able to do what I want to do, like you were saying too. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Final question, guys. This is a random one. What's your favorite birthday gift you have gotten for each other?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Oh, I got a good one. All right, I'll go
Mike,
first.
You go first. Yeah.
We are going to Dominican Republic in a couple of weeks. Our birthday's coming up. So because it's so soon, that's just an easy one. And I love travel. We both love travel. That's something else we both know that we love. When we travel, you're on vacation, you're away. Life experience is, I don't know, when you go somewhere, it's just great. So we're going to head down to DR. Not that it's, we're going to probably, we're going to stay at the resort or whatever, but we're just going to lay on the beach and take a break and relax. So that would be
amazing.
Amazing.
I got mine. When I turned 40, Mike got everyone to make a video and he put it all together. So all friends and family each recorded something special for me. And I think that's been my favorite gift I've ever gotten.
Mm. That's cool. That video production came in handy, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. Every now and then.
Yeah. Awesome, guys. Nora and Mike, well, hey, thanks so much for coming on the show. Tell us, where can people find out more about you if they want to learn more?
You know, we're just launching a new company, just bought the URL, so it's not actually active yet, but it will be, you know, relatively soon.
Freeflowproperties.com.
Freeflowproperties.com, F-R-E-E-F-L-O-W, properties.com. Again, it doesn't exist yet, but within a few weeks, I don't know when this is going to hit the airwaves.
It'll come out in a couple of months. So I think when this airs, it probably, how about this? That's your accountability. By the time this airs, you better have that website up.
Yes, he's given us a mission. I love it. Freeflowproperties.com. Yes.
And if you want to check out our Airbnb, you can search High Falls Lodge in Socrates, New York. I think it would come up.
For sure.
Amazing. Nora and Mike, your story is inspiring. It truly is a way to hopefully inspire some people to invest wherever they're at, no matter if they feel it's too expensive. And yeah, super excited to see what you guys are up to at the end of the year and if you've achieved your goals. So thanks again so much for coming on, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you both.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
It was fun.
And that was Nor and Mike. Chad, what'd you think of that lovely couple?
I loved it. I loved it. I mean, just thinking back of Nora getting started in 2019, I mean, it feels like yesterday. I guess it is almost 5 years ago at this point. But what she's went through to get there. And then, of course, my passion for short-term rentals and intricacies of knowing that world, that seeing how they expanded, got into that space, absolutely crushing it, have the right mindset. Yeah, I loved it. I love the episode. I love what they're doing.
I think it's so cool to kind of see how Nor especially did the whole, like, it's not I can't, it's how can I? And she figured out how to make it work in Brooklyn, which is like an expensive market. She bought a pretty expensive property while taking two trains across the city to drop the kids off at school, then another train to work, and then probably doing the same in reverse every day. And it just goes to show you, while also living in a sketchy neighborhood, right? And so it just goes to show you that, like, everyone out there with any type of success has got that funny story. I can't believe I did that. I would never do that again. But holy crap, that's what got me here today. And so, like I said earlier in the episode, if you're not doing that now and you haven't done it yet, you need to figure out what that thing is. What are you going to do that no one else is willing to do to get ahead? Because everyone has done that thing.
Yeah. Short term, I always say too, like, short term pain for long term gain. I'm sure there was a lot of pain there for her, but fast forward 5 years in an amazing spot. And it was uncomfortable, you know, putting yourself in uncomfortable positions to achieve what you want to achieve rather than working at a 9-to-5 till you're 75.
Yeah, exactly. I think Tim Ferriss says it best in his book, The 4-Hour Work Week. And I'm paraphrasing, but it's something along the lines of, like, your success in life is directly correlated to the amount of uncomfortable situations you put yourself in. And I just, when I read that line like 6 times and I was like, yes, 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 yes. So even if you're comfortable now, and it may not even make sense to do something uncomfortable, just do it anyway to just strengthen your uncomfortable muscle. In that book, Tim Ferriss, he talks about, like, laying down in the store, like in the grocery store, just laying down, like, that's weird. It's kind of uncomfortable, right? Talking, you know, if you're single or whatever, like going up to a random girl or guy and just, like, asking for their number. You don't need to call them, just ask for their number. And all that stuff is just going to get you out of your comfort zone. And I think that's pretty powerful and pretty exciting. So
yeah, 100%.
Cool, man. Well, anything else before we get out of here?
I think that's it for today. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Well, again, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you haven't already, please, please, please leave us a rating and review. Give us a follow. I'm the Fi Guy on Instagram. Chad, what's your name?
Rocky the Realtor. on Instagram.
Rocky the Realtor on Instagram. And we will see you guys all next time.
That's it for this episode of Investify. We hope that these nuggets of real estate wisdom lead to more savvy financial planning and a clearer path towards financial freedom. For more content like this, subscribe to the show at investify.com. Don't forget to leave a rating and share it with your friends. Together, we can transform more real estate newbies into successful and clever investors. Thank you so much for listening. See you on the next one.